Good evening, and welcome to this evening's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Karen Kiefer, a member of the club's International Relations Member-Led Forum and your chair for this evening's program, CORE Africa, Peace Corps for Africans. It's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Liz Fanning, CORE Africa founder and executive director, has more than 20 years of leadership, fundraising, and marketing experience at nonprofit organizations that focus on public education, community empowerment, environmental preservation, and international development. She served as a Peace Corps volunteer in the High Atlas Mountains of Morocco from 1993 to 1995, where she lived in a small Berber village and worked on environmental sustainability projects. Liz has worked for a wide range of nonprofit organizations, including the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, Schoolhouse Supplies, and the Near East Foundation, and she's served on numerous boards of directors. Liz has a Bachelor's of Arts in Economics and History from Boston University and a Master's in Public Administration with a concentration in Finance from New York University's Robert F. Wagner Graduate School of Public Service. She will be joined by one of her Moroccan staff, Hiba Tazi, who was a volunteer in her program, CORE Africa. She constructed a preschool, and now she's staff. They're going to have a dialogue to discuss each of their roles, and you are invited to ask a question by raising your hand throughout the presentation, but you may want to hear a little about it first before you start asking questions. And then I will pass the microphone around to you when you do have a question so that the radio audience can hear it. So to tell us more about CORE Africa and what it's all about, I welcome Liz Fanning and her student staff person, Hiba Tazi. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's really great to be here. And as you can probably tell by now, I'm not Cindy Crawford, and I won't be offended if you jump out and go to the other session. But thank you for being here to hear about our little organization, CORE Africa. It means the world to us. We work so hard to make it happen. And this is Hiba Tazi. She was a CORE Africa volunteer in our first group in Morocco, and we started, almost 5 years ago, actually, on the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps, we officially launched CORE Africa because we want this to be a celebration of the incredible success of the Peace Corps. What better way to celebrate that success than to pass the baton to young Africans who want the chance to be Peace Corps volunteers themselves in their own countries. I was a volunteer, as Karen said, in Morocco 20 years ago. And young Moroccans I would meet, first of all, they would ask me, what's it like in the mountains? What are the people like? So in a way, I knew more about their country than they did. And they would say, wow, it's so exciting what you're doing. I would tell them about our projects. I actually lived way high in the mountains, and we did these summer projects where we studied the ancient tribal laws that govern grazing, and we lived with the shepherds and the animals for the summers. It was really incredible. And they would be like, wow, that's so great. Can I be a Peace Corps volunteer? You know, I'm Moroccan. I want to help my country. You know, like, I could do at least as good a job as you could. And they could. And I had to say, no, sorry. It's only for Americans. And it just really felt silly. So, that was a woman that I met at a cafe, and really her question has dogged me for 20 years. But it wasn't until I was working in international development in the last about 6-7 years ago that I really became very frustrated with the way a lot of it is done, and mostly because they don't live with the people. They don't listen to the people. It's a lot of, you know, experts that go in and try to be the saviors and tell them what they need, and they don't listen to the people. And I always thought that the Peace Corps model of living with the people as they do for an extended period of time and really coming to understand them and their complexities and their uniqueness and all of that has to be taken into account. So we wanted to create an organization that that asks people what they want and then connect to the NGO resources that exist. So that's really the model, but I put that together with the Peace Corps model and to give these young people. And I also, I found that the staff people of the organization I was working with, they were from Morocco, they were Moroccans, but they didn't really listen to the people that they were helping. They didn't really know them. It was a class difference. They didn't know what they didn't know, basically. And I really felt like what they needed was the Peace Corps experience. And they would have come to be much more passionate about the work that they were doing and cared a lot more rather than just being sort of the saviors. So we created CoAfrica. It started in Morocco in 2013. We raised enough money. We had a tribute to Ambassador Richard Holbrooke, who actually started his career as Peace Corps director in Morocco in the early 70s. Very few people know that about him. But he loved the Peace Corps. He loved young people. He loved Morocco. And when he passed away suddenly, he had actually introduced me to the person who was my board chair at the time, who had been a Peace Corps volunteer under him, and they had stayed in touch. And so when he passed away suddenly, we created this tribute to him to start CoAfrica in memory of Richard Holbrooke. And it really was his friends and family that have been so supportive that really got us started, and we raised enough money for me to quit my job and move to Morocco in 2013. The first year, we had there was a picture of the seven of them. The seven volunteers, they were almost all women. Heba was one of those volunteers. And they lived all across the country. And the model is for college graduates, usually young, sometimes older, like Peace Corps. They're from all areas of life, but they are college graduates, and they give up a year to go live in a remote, high-poverty community, live with the people, facilitate community meetings, ask people what they want, help them really drill down. You know, I tell the volunteers, there's a famous quote from, I think, Henry Ford, who said, he said that if I had asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. So you really have to drill down. Well, why do you want faster horses? You really want to get from point A to point B faster. And we train the volunteers on the different NGOs that are in the country, the different innovations that are going on, the resources that they would have available. And then when they go there and they come up with the project, then we mix them, we put them together with the NGO. So it's pretty simple. They do that. They spend a year living in the community. They facilitate the project, and they implement it, and they evaluate it, and then they leave. And the idea really is that the volunteer is building the capacity of the community. You know, sometimes it just takes an objective person to come in and listen with a college education to understand the types of resources and help make it happen. So that's the model. So we thought that we would have a dialogue here today instead of just a presentation, just because we happen to have a CoAfrica volunteer in the flesh here, Heba Jazzy. I hired Heba this summer. Earlier this year, we received a major investment from a Moroccan company. A state-owned Moroccan company was our biggest sponsor in Morocco, and they gave us a big grant through the Clinton Global Initiative to expand CoAfrica to Senegal and Malawi and invest in the headquarters. So I moved back to Washington, D.C. and hired Heba, and we've got a safety and security coordinator. We have an Atlas Corps fellow from Rwanda who's working with us as our country office liaison. We've hired startup directors in Malawi and Senegal. We've identified the volunteers. Actually, what's really interesting, too, is that we're going to have 10, in Senegal, we're going to have 10 Senegalese and 2 Moroccans who've already served in Morocco. So now that we have more than one country, we're going to start sending them between countries. And in Malawi, we're going to have 10 Malawians and 2 Moroccans, and they're going to be our first married couple, actually. Sukaina, who was in the first group, and her husband. So that's really exciting. So they're going to start training in January, and we're off and running. So why don't we start with Hiba? I'm going to ask Hiba to just say a few words about her experience and the project that she did, and then we'll start. We have a list of questions we're going to ask each other, but we do want to encourage you to speak up if you have a question. That's always my favorite part of the show. So Hiba, would you say a few words?
Good evening, everybody. So as Liz mentioned, I was a Core Africa volunteer in Morocco. I'm actually based here in the States. I was an odd case for the first group. All the volunteers live in Morocco. They're country residents. I'm Moroccan as well and have moved to the States when I was young. So this was a great opportunity for me to go back to my country and reconnect and do something, this kind of work that I've always wanted to do. So Core Africa was perfect because it was for Moroccans. My site was located in a small Berber village, also in the Hayatlis Mountains, actually in the same valley where Liz served 20 years ago. I lived with a host family for about a year. And the first couple months, as we were trained by Core Africa, it's a time for us to integrate in the community, to gain their trust, to become one of the community members, partake in their daily activities, and really get to learn and get to know as much as we can about the village, the resources, the needs, and et cetera. So after about a 2-month period, I started facilitating community meetings with the community members and just started asking questions, what was needed, what projects would contribute to making their lives better, what are the resources, their needs, and sort of putting those puzzle pieces together. And as Liz said, be that facilitator and knowing the resources outside of their village, trying to connect those two together. So initially, the project idea that came up was to build a study hall for the children of the school to in which they would memorize the Quran. So a member of the community donated the land, which was great, and we sort of started the process of the construction. However, because of the location, or the land, which was situated in between 2 primary schools in the village, we realized that we couldn't follow up with the recitation hall because it would be too loud for the primary schools nearby, because of the chanting and the memorization by the children. That we couldn't follow through with that. So we sat everybody down again and reevaluated everything. And through talking to a lot of the community members, a lot of the teachers in the school, in the village, we realized another issue that came up was that one of the reasons a lot of the children weren't doing so well in primary school, there was a very low graduation rate from the primary school. And we realized that one of the main reasons they weren't doing so well was because they were not given a basic academic foundation before they started primary school, the first grade. And the reason that is because, in the village, the main language that is spoken is Berber. And not Arabic, and the program that is taught in schools is in Arabic. So children started primary school studying in a program that is not their mother tongue, and just not knowing the basic foundation, such as letters, alphabet, etc. So we after, again, facilitating meetings and talking to everybody in the community, we realized that building a preschool would help to solve those issues and provide them with that foundation so they would be prepared for first grade and hope and improve throughout school. So that's the project that we did. We started the construction. Everybody in the community volunteered and was part of the process from the very beginning. The men helped volunteer in the actual construction. Women volunteered with cooking the meals. Children also participated. So it was a very community-led effort. The construction itself took us, I think, about 3 months. And then after that, I exhausted resources to find the teacher and the equipment for the preschool. In the first year, we had 27 children enrolled. And this year, there are about 18. So, that's the project. If you have any more questions.
Thank you.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Do you have mostly boys in the schools, or do they go together?
It's a really good question. Do you want to answer?
Yes. There were probably half boys, half girls. They attended school together, and it was about a 50-50 ratio.
Across Morocco, the government has really made an emphasis on getting girls in schools, and it's been really impressive. When I was there, they were half and half. I think the girls drop out of school earlier, maybe when they're 11 or 12 generally, and that's still a problem. But they do start out pretty even. For us, though, you know, all of our volunteers the first year were women. We didn't know why. We had gender-neutral outreach, and for some reason, almost all of our volunteers are women. And then the second year, almost all of our volunteers were men. We didn't know why that happened either. I think it was because the girls were so pretty the first year that all the guys wanted to join. But do we have any former Peace Corps volunteers here in the audience? Ah, there we go. Okay. Any former country directors? So you guys understand what this is. And the Peace Corps volunteers are the first ones to really get what we're doing here and say, oh my gosh, what a great idea. Because it's so obvious, these young people that we work with, and really what we want to do as volunteers in this country is empower others and give them the chance to do it. So our volunteers work alongside Peace Corps volunteers often. Peace Corps has been incredibly supportive. The headquarters, from the Peace Corps director down to every staff person, has really just gone out of their way to be helpful to us in the countries. Their trainers train our volunteers. On their Saturdays, they come in and give the same training on safety and security that they give to the Americans, to our volunteers, and project evolution, how to do a project. they teach them how to do that as well. They've been really terrific, and they share all their materials with us. And I always say that, you know, we're a new organization, but we're building on 50 years of Peace Corps experience in these countries. They share their sites with us and all their information and contact information and maps, and it's great. It's a good partnership. Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to ask, what are your sources for recruiting the volunteers? Do you recruit at all from diaspora, or is it mainly right now locally based? And what are your aspirations for recruiting?
I've always wanted Core Africa to be a bridge back to your home country for the diaspora community. I didn't think we'd get the chance to try it out the very first year, but that's really what HIBA was, and it worked out super successful. So we haven't made much of an effort. We would certainly be open to it again, but right now, actually the first year, half of our volunteers were former Peace Corps trainers. And the second year, most of our volunteers were counterparts of Peace Corps volunteers. So they're our best recruiters. You know, they're the ones who know the gems in their communities. And the people that they work so closely with are the ones who really understand what this is. And so it's been a really good partnership. But basically, we work with universities. Facebook is our best outreach. It hasn't been a problem. We've had amazing candidates. It's been great so far. Yes, sir.
Is it correct that Core Africa is only soliciting for African Americans to go?
No. This is for people in their own country. So it's for Africans. So in Morocco, we recruit Moroccans. And in Senegal, we're recruiting Senegalese. And in Malawi, it's Malawians. But we're also going to have some of the Moroccans who, once they do a year of service in their own country, they can apply to serve in another country. So now that we're in more than one country. But no, the diaspora community is definitely a big potential for us, especially down the road, I think, when we're more established. Right now, it's really about giving the young people in these countries the chance to be part of the solution. You know, when Peace Corps started 50 years ago, in a lot of these countries, there were 2 college graduates in the whole country. And now there's 50 universities. So, you know, they have highly educated young people who are unemployed and really looking for the opportunity to show the world what they can do, but also to find themselves. You know, the gap year that we take for granted, the opportunity to do something like this is really something that is lays the foundation for a successful and purposeful career. So that's what we're trying to give them, that network, that being part of something so much bigger than yourself. I've been an RPCV for 20 years. That's stands for Return Peace Corps Volunteer. The personal and professional benefits of having been a Peace Corps volunteer are just enormous. And that's what these young Africans need. They need the networking and the career support and the friends. And there's so many benefits. Yes, is there a question?
Yes. I'm curious what kind of data collection you're doing about the projects that are being undertaken and what level of evaluations you're doing afterward and how that's going to shape the program going forward.
It's such a great question. It's so important. And it's a big reason that we started Core Africa in the first place. We really want to promote transparency and accountability and evaluation in development efforts because there's not enough of it. And we believe that, you know, when you do things on such a small scale, that you can be really transparent about it and, you know, share everything from the beginning. The first year, we actually worked with a team of students from the Wagner Graduate School of Public Service, where I went from NYU. And we had a team of grad students working with us to come up with tools to measure the projects, the impact of the projects that the volunteers create. It was hard, though. I mean, this is really hard. People have PhDs in evaluation. It's an extremely sophisticated and complicated issue, but we're committed to doing it. We're actually getting Peace Corps response volunteers this year to implement the tools that these students came up with to see what happens. I don't think they're great. They're definitely they're too sophisticated for a lot of the villages that our volunteers are going to be working in, but it's a place to start, and we'll come back and say they're too sophisticated after implementing them, and then we'll keep massaging it. A lot of experts in this field won't even talk to me at this point because, you know, we have 20 volunteers right now in Morocco. We'll have 54 next year in 3 countries. So for this kind of discussion, our N is really small. But, you know, I think now is the time that we do invest in trying to figure this stuff out so that by the time our N is big enough, we'll have some tools that are worthwhile. We want to come up with something consistent, something basic, but useful. You know, it's never going to be perfect, but something that we can, a tool that we can measure no matter where the project is or what the project is, some way to measure the community's perception of the value of the project, I think would be really interesting. Yes.
Thank you. I'm not really very familiar with the Peace Corps or its model, and so I'm just wondering, how do the volunteers sort of handle their daily expenses? I mean, how are they funded in some way? And then the second question is, are you planning to expand into other countries? And what's the criteria that needs to be met in order for a country to be considered? I'm thinking specifically of South Sudan.
Ah, yes. Can't wait to go to South Sudan. We plan to be in every African country. We want to have 250 volunteers a year in every African country in 10 years. That's 13,500 Core Africa volunteers across Africa, which is very ambitious. But so that's why we're starting small and we're building carefully. But we can be in every African country. Peace Corps is only in 33 or 34 countries because of safety and security issues of the volunteers like South Sudan. But, you know, we'd be working with South Sudanese. There are some countries, and I like to think when we have 250 a year, it'll be a mix of people from that country and from all other African countries, which will be so interesting. But there will be some countries like Congo or Mali now or South Sudan that might not be good hosts for people from outside that country, but that's okay because there's plenty of people from within that country that would benefit from this, and they might have the opportunity to go to other countries, which would be so interesting. So it's really unlimited. I mean, 250, it sounds like a lot, but really 250 volunteers in the country, they're not going to be bumping into each other. There's a lot of work to be done. And I'm driven by the fact that this is so doable. You know, it's one step at a time. But As far as the stipends, they receive stipends. Peace Corps volunteers get a living wage, enough to live comfortably in a high-poverty community. You're nodding, so you must have been a volunteer. But, okay. I got about $200, and we pay our volunteers, Corps Africa volunteers, pretty much what the Peace Corps volunteers get. It's one of the reasons that Peace Corps is so successful, and a lot of other national service efforts in Africa haven't been, is that they don't pay them enough, and they also don't take care of them. It's what Peace Corps does really well. They take care of the, not just the financial needs, but the emotional needs and just the support, and so that they can be successful at their sites. It's really important. We're not Peace Corps right now yet. We do give them health insurance. We don't have a medical team, but we do take care of them, and hopefully we'll grow. We'll have doctors one day. Yes, sir.
I have a question about the three countries you were stationed in Africa. In Morocco, there are three main languages, French, Arabic, mm-hmm. and Berber. Mm-hmm. And you can answer that, then I'll have to ask you the other two.
Sorry? Was that a question?
Yes. I mean, which is the most widely spoken language in Morocco of the three ones that are spoken, French, Arabic, or Berber?
Well, the Arabic, the Moroccan Arabic, it's called Darja, and that's what all of our volunteers speak. And most Moroccans speak Darja. Some areas, like remote areas where Hiba was and where I was when I was a Peace Corps volunteer, speak Berber. Some of our Moroccan volunteers who are Arabs have gone to live in Berber communities and learned the Berber dialect, and that's been really interesting because they never would have learned Berber. And there's a clash between the Berbers and the Arabs, and for an Arab to go to a Berber community and learn their language is really, it's so huge. It shows so much respect, and it does so much to, you know, it's like Americans going to live in these countries and learning their languages. It's a very powerful thing. It's humility. It's something that we really try to teach our volunteers is, you help people by respecting them, by listening to them, and by being their friend.
Well, I met an Egyptian doctor, MD, uh-huh. who with some of his fellow MDs from Egypt went to Morocco for a conference, and they told me they were looking forward to it because they could speak Arabic to them.
Yeah.
Well, they said they could hardly speak Arabic to them because so. The Arabic that's spoken in Morocco has so many Berber words, they couldn't understand what they were saying.
Yeah, well, you might be thinking of classical Arabic, too, which a lot of elite Moroccans speak classical Arabic, and it's what the Quran is written in, so a lot of Moroccans are familiar with it, but they have their own language, Darja. It's like French to English. It's completely different.
Yes. Well, in Senegal, where you were also, the most widely spoken African language there is Wolof.
Wolof, right.
Did you hear much of it?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. All of our volunteers speaking Wolof. Our Moroccans are now learning Wolof, okay. So who are going to go serve in Senegal. We gave them, the Peace Corps shared their Wolof manuals with us, and they've been studying up, and we'll give them some immersion, a couple weeks of immersion Wolof. Mm-hmm. Same thing in Malawi, Chichewa.
And then the third country you mentioned that you were in was Malawi.
Yes.
It was a German colony from 1885 to 1915.
That's right.
Do any people still speak German there?
I didn't meet anybody who spoke German, actually. That's an interesting question. But the languages is a really big issue, and it's something that is a big issue for Peace Corps. For us, it's been less of an issue because our volunteers are from that country. You know, they tell me stories about moving to their site, you know, and how hard it was. But, you know, it was so hard and I was so lonely. But I had dinner with my family and we were joking. And they have no idea what it's like to move to these villages and not know how to speak and communicate with them. So it's a huge advantage to them and to their success as a volunteer. So we're going to start running into those issues as we expand, which is why we're only doing two this first year, just so we can really pay attention to them and figure out what they need. Did you have a question, Bob?
Yes, I have actually two questions also. Okay. And the first is for Hibo, and it actually relates to your question for the earlier gentleman relative to language. My question is, what was it like? What were the dynamics of the Berber-speaking young children learning Arabic in the preschool? How did it go? What was it like?
They actually were really, really excited because this is they knew this is something they had to do. Yeah, they were really thrilled. They were very enthusiastic to learning. The teacher who we picked was a really great one, and she was teaching them all these different songs and, you know, was leading all these different activities. So they were really great. And they were looking forward to it because they saw that their older siblings and friends spoke Arabic and they understood it. And, you know, they were too young to prior to the preschool, they didn't know it. So they were looking forward to learning it and understanding and being part of that too.
That's wonderful. That's so important, that opportunity. So the other question I have is what do you all see as being the future role of the internet access in all of these locations?
It's a good question, and it's another thing that I go to Peace Corps to learn how they responded to this revolution in service. People can go to their sites and Skype with their parents every night, which is completely different than it was when we were volunteers. We didn't have phones then. So a lot of the projects revolve around creating websites for small businesses in remote areas. I think in Heba's village, they wanted, there's a lot of tourism, there's hiking, and so people make their extra rooms into boarding houses, I guess. And so they'd love to be able to post them on the internet and draw people and get reservations. So, you know, build their business, small business projects. And it's changing everything. And our volunteers are young, college-educated people from these countries. They're all on Facebook and social media all the time. So they understand it a lot better than I do. It'll be interesting to see what kind of projects that they do. But the projects they've been doing so far have been pretty basic. Clean water, irrigation, preschools, book drives, that sort of thing. Nobody's done a technology project that I know of. We had a solar energy project. That was interesting.
I'd like to remind our radio audience that we are listening to Liz Fanning and Heba Tazi from CORE Africa, speaking on CORE Africa, Peace Corps for Africans. So the next question is?
Hi. I'd like to ask, just like the conventional Peace Corps serves to kind of ground truth or dispel, or ground truth who Americans are and just dispel a lot of yes, misconceptions in the global media about us and our culture. How do you see this? I feel like it has so much power in terms of ethnic strife within countries when you talk about South Sudan, mm-hmm, and so many others. But I'm just wondering if you have any comments on that. It seems like one of these like difficult boundaries or edges where the volunteer could possibly be putting themselves into a dangerous situation, but then there could be a lot of healing in the society as well, mm-hmm, from that. So,
absolutely, there are things to be careful of and warnings. But you know, when you go into a community out of friendship, you know, with you know, no weapons, but you know, just books and wanting to help and the humility to live with people as they do. It goes a long way, and you know, our volunteers are idealistic, just like the American Peace Corps volunteers. They don't have those misconceptions. You know, they're educated and they want to help, and it can be so powerful. I barely let myself think about the impact that we can have on, you know, regional strife within, amongst, and within these countries. Because it can be extremely powerful. I remember the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps. A lot of people who worked at State Department were talking about how so many of the State Department and USAID staffers are former Peace Corps volunteers and how that enriches everything that they do, their foreign policy. And I like to think that, you know, 50 years from now, half of the African leaders would be former CORE Africa volunteers, having lived in poverty. You know, you get the kind of understanding of poverty you can only get from living it. I think that that's going to have a big impact on corruption and also understanding, because you get people who care and who have empathy. You can't teach empathy.
Yeah, hi. If my memory serves, South Sudan is largely Christian, mm-hmm. North Sudan largely Muslim. Did that have anything to do with your choice?
Oh, we're not in Sudan.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
We're not in Sudan.
I misunderstood you. I thought you said South Sudan.
It was a question somebody had asked, and we will get to South Sudan eventually.
Yeah.
But we started with politically stable countries that have a long history of Peace Corps. Morocco is the bridge to Africa, and mostly it was, people ask me why Morocco, and I say it's because that's where Peace Corps
sent
me.
It's the stability. I get
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Senegal and Malawi as well. Malawi is an incredible country. They all have lots of interesting NGO activities going on, and yes, stability. But we will get into every country eventually. We will go to South Sudan, and that will be a concern. But hopefully we'll know a lot more by then.
Heba, why did you decide to become a volunteer?
I was always really interested in this kind of work. In fact, I wanted to join the Peace Corps myself. And when I was applying, I realized that there was a very small chance that they would place me in Morocco because I am from there. And I really wanted to go back. I hadn't been back in a really long time, and I wanted to be back and do something really good for my country. And so I came across Core Africa, and it fit perfectly because it was for Moroccans. I've always was really intrigued by development work, so it worked out really nicely.
Would you like to continue your dialogue with each other?
Yeah, sure. One of the things that I really love about our model, too, with Peace Corps is a lot of people leave their sites and never go back. I mean, never don't stay in touch. Well, when I was a volunteer, that's another thing with technology has changed, that people are now Facebook friends with their host families, which is weird. Because when I was there, there was no, I mean, we couldn't even write letters because they didn't read and write. So, but with our volunteers, they're from these countries, and they can really stay in touch with the families. And in fact, we've had some families go and the host families have gone to visit the volunteers and their families in Casablanca after their service, which has been so interesting that the families get to know each other, as you know, and they have so much in common. And there's this interesting, and I wanted to ask Heba about how she stays in touch with her family and what the relationship is like now.
Well, I do keep a really close relationship with my host family. In fact, I was just there visiting a few weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago, and it was my first time back since I had finished my service, and it was really incredible. I was received very warmly. Everybody was really excited to see me, very appreciative of my visit. And yeah, I'm really happy that we have kept a really close relationship. They call me sometimes, I do too, to check up on the school, make sure everything is running well. I feel really grateful.
Mm-hmm. And actually, it's just a quick note along those lines is that one of the things that constantly amazes me about our volunteers is that they're just like us. They remind me of Peace Corps volunteers so much. And going back to see your village, it's a similar kind of story where, you know, there's a big reunion and it's really happy. But I think in our model, especially for the volunteers who still live in Morocco, they really visit each other regularly and have become extended families, which is really unusual.
You mentioned some of the NGOs that were not very effective, you thought, in your experience. Could you be a little more specific or give maybe an example or a horror story, or what are the kind of areas that they failed in?
Sure.
And for our radio audience, NGO means non-governmental organization.
Right, we call them nonprofits.
Yeah, nonprofits.
But these are the work organizations doing good work. And I was working for one of these organizations. I was the development director for an international organization that had a project in Morocco, and they had this very successful project that was funded by USAID, $1.2 million, to promote girls in school in a valley in the High Atlas Mountains, and it was just a couple of valleys over from where I had lived. So I knew this area really well, and I couldn't imagine how they could spend that kind of money. It really is like going back in time 1,000 years to some of these places. But it was incredibly successful, and girls' participation in school went from 10% to 98% after this project. So USAID loved it, and I was development director, so I took a group of women donors to visit, and it was a really fun trip. We went to, you know, Marrakesh, and we went up into the mountains, and it was really far, and it was really an incredible trip and experience. But the girls were not in school in these villages, and I spoke Tashilhet. This is the Berber dialect up there, and I would just say to the women, you know, are your girls in school? Oh, no, no, they came out, they stay home. So it just wasn't true what we said we were doing. And it was really devastating for me because I, you know, I really knew and loved these people. And when I went back, my boss didn't want to hear it, you know, because we had proposals pending with USAID for other countries. Don't say anything. I even went to USAID and I told them, you've got to evaluate this project. You've got to show up randomly, you know, and look at with somebody who speaks the dialect and see what's going on. They didn't want to hear it either. And it was really devastating for me. I was so upset by the whole experience. But also while I was up there, I remember they said, we had these meetings with these community leaders, and they were all farmers, and we sat down with them at the end of the day, and they were all tired. And, you know, it was an amazing experience, and the women were walking around with the big piles of firewood on their backs and the sheep and everything. And they looked at us and they said, you know, can you help us build a bridge? Because there's a school on the other side of the valley, but, you know, we can't get there in the wintertime because the kids can't get to the valley. What we need is a bridge. And I'm like, great. And I went back and I said, let's build them a bridge. And my boss said, you know, no, USAID doesn't fund bridges. We're not gonna do that. And so I thought about this. This is what really stuck in my craw, and I wanted to think of a solution. How would we get that bridge built? And when I was reading all of this about, you know, Bill Easterly, his premise actually, it was his book, The White Man's Burden. His premise is the only plan is to have no plan. So go in without any preconceived notion of what you're going to do for them, and ask them what they want, and have a person from that country doing it. So I put that model. I wanted to send people to live in communities, and I put that together with that woman that I met at a cafe 20 years ago to create the opportunity for Moroccans to do this in their own country, to be Peace Corps volunteers. So maybe they would go up there, and they would ask people what they want. They say they want a bridge, and they'd say, well, okay, bridge, because, well, maybe it's cheaper to build another school on this side of the valley, or maybe it's better to, I don't know, some other solution. The idea is not, let's just build them a bridge. The idea is to have the conversation and to bring in the resources to really talk to people about what the best solution is and help them have ownership of the project, so it's their bridge. We require communities to contribute 25% to the cost of the project. 10% has to be financial, and the rest can be, you know, land donations and volunteer labor, but they've got to contribute a significant portion so that they're customers. They're not charity beneficiaries. You know, a lot of these NGOs, they say, well, it was free for them anyway, so, you know, what do they expect? You know, they don't really, there's no accountability. And these people are so, they're poor, they're living on the edge, they're vulnerable to begin with. To go in there, there should be a really high bar to help people, because you can do a lot of harm. And we want to hold the NGO sector up to a higher standard, and we want to do that by holding ourselves to the highest standard. You can't tell people what to do, you have to show them, and so that's what we're doing with Core Africa. Yes.
That's a good segue. I was just wondering, how is Core Africa funded? What are your sources?
Well, like I said, we did get funding from a tribute to Ambassador Richard Holbrooke. We do get a lot of funding from former Peace Corps volunteers. In fact, we're starting a Pay It Forward campaign to raise money from former Peace Corps volunteers, because we want this to come from all of us. But really, we are committed to raising funds from the countries that we serve. There is money in Morocco. There's money in Senegal. Excuse me. There's even money in Malawi. Our big gift from OCP Foundation, our Moroccan sponsor, it's so meaningful because it is from a Moroccan company who values this opportunity for their young people and believes in, you know, participatory development and national service and wants to encourage other countries across Africa and to promote solidarity with other African countries. So they are funding everything the first year in Senegal and Malawi, and hopefully the following years we're already starting to cultivate donors from within those countries, because they understood that these countries, they don't have the culture of philanthropy and they don't know what this is, even though there's been Peace Corps there for so long, that we want to show them what this is and then ask them to join them in supporting, providing this for their own citizens. So we're really committed to raising money from within Africa. And I think Africans, they talk about this too, that, you know, international aid has done so much for these countries, good and bad, but, you know, it's brought a lot of wealth and expertise and education to these places, and now they really can do it for themselves, and they want the chance to do that. And so we are really, I like to think, building on what I think the American government has done best, which is the Peace Corps. And it's the Peace Corps' fundamental mission to transfer skills. And so we really embody that, and we want to work together with Peace Corps. We don't want to replace Peace Corps. We want to complement it.
I have a question about today's politics and people thinking that Muslims all over the world are ISIS. Has that extended to Morocco? I mean, there's a lot of ignorance in America about the Islamic religion and the Muslim communities throughout the world, the differences and all, just as there is with Christianity and all. Has it extended to Morocco? Is it a dangerous place to visit like the Mideast is? Or can you comment on that?
Well, I'm not an expert, but I've lived in Morocco the last couple of years, and I've really never felt safer than when I'm in Morocco. And people are wonderful, like they are everywhere. But I think the issue is more, and I heard somebody say it on CNN recently, somebody from the Wilson Center was talking about terrorism. He said, we're not going to solve the problem of terrorism until we address the issue of alienated young people leading purposeless lives. And that's really, I mean, it's yeah. I like to think that we are creating an opportunity for young people to be useful and to find a purposeful life for themselves and the vehicle to do it. So, I mean, we're not going to solve terrorism, but I like to think we're part of the solution and we can be a model, because these young people are incredible and they need an opportunity to show the world.
We could do that here in America as well.
There should be a lot of it everywhere.
How do you handle the ongoing support that these projects need? I mean, for example, the school. Mm-hmm. So where's the funding coming to pay for the teacher mm-hmm. when she leaves and goes somewhere else? Who's responsible for replacing her? And again, a lot of these projects, you know, a bridge needs maintenance.
Yeah, that's a good question. The school, they set it up so that the families pay 25 dirhams, which is about $3 per month per child. And that pays for part of the teacher's salary. We had the Ministry of Education was also donating money toward the teacher's salary. We did have a problem with the school. We did have a volunteer replace Heba, and there was a problem with the school. There was a leak. And the people came to Nadia, the volunteer there, and said, hey, there's a leak in your school. And she was like, it's your school, and we can address that, but we have to address that together, and this is, you know, what are you going to do about it, and how do you think we should fix it? And they did, and they fixed the leak, and they repainted, and, you know, it's continuing on. It's a long project, but it's a process. But, like, when he was talking earlier about her project and how it came about and how it evolved, and that's how these things are. They're complex. And I thought it was interesting, too, that they said they wanted a Quranic school, a study hall for learning the Quran. It's not an obvious development project. And when they came to us and said this is what the project's going to be, okay, well, that's what they say they want. I interviewed, I don't know if Heber remembers this, but I always ask volunteers a hypothetical question. What if you're in a village and you facilitate meetings and the people say to you, we want a Coca-Cola machine, that's what we want for our village. What do you do? And there's no real right answer to that, because it depends on the situation. But I don't want to hear, I'm not going to give it to them because that's not right. Maybe they know something. Maybe they need a little bit of enjoyment in their life or a little bit of celebration every now and then. You know, who's to say? Or maybe you start to do the project for the Coke machine and then they change their mind. And, you know, when they have to put their own money into it, too, that changes the equation. I had a woman tell me, somebody from Maryland, she said she had kids in a school, and it was a school that was sort of on the edge of a poorer neighborhood. So they qualified for actually money from the wealthier school. They were going to get a transfer of money. And she said, at first, we were offended by this. But she said it took all but 30 seconds for us to go from feeling offended to feeling like, how are we going to take advantage of this situation and get even more money out of them? And that's human nature. And that's what happens with development, too. These NGOs come in with a lot of money, and you're dealing with these incentives and very complicated things, and why it's so important to have somebody living there. And too, you know, Hiba's preschool cost about $8,000 total. We provided $2,500. The community provided maybe $500 or $1,000, but she raised money on GoFundMe. Her mom was helping her raise money. I mean, we have access to Peace Corps funds and USAID funds, and there are other ways we can fund, and we want to start crowdfunding for the individual projects too. But the point is that, I forgot the point, actually. The point is that...
it's the ongoing structure.
It's the ownership too of the community, and that's the important thing, right? Yes, sir.
Liz, as a former Peace Corps volunteer, the Peace Corps interacted at the national, the provincial, and the local, and even the village level, mm-hmm. in support of volunteers. So in your program, how do you, when you go into a new country like, you know, recently Malawi or Senegal, how do you introduce Core Africa to, you know, to the host country at those levels? And how do you work with them in terms of selecting sites and projects? I mean, you mentioned that the projects are largely self-determined in terms of need, but in terms of selecting sites, how do you send people? Is it based on, you know, some of the folks that are part of the Core Africa? Do they suggest the sites, or how do you do that?
It's a mishmash. Let me start from the beginning. When we first enter a country, like with Senegal and Malawi, the first thing I did was go meet with the ambassadors to the United States in D.C. To tell them about what we wanted to do and make sure that this is something they wanted. And of course they did. They were really excited about it. And so when we went to Senegal and Malawi, they introduced us to government officials and some NGO leaders and some business leaders too. And then we just went. And Peace Corps has been our biggest partner, especially for site selection. We sit down with them and they'll go over, they'll suggest sites, but all of our NGO partners, our model is to have what we call development partners, which is mostly NGOs, but can also be universities or government ministries or, you know, architects we had an architect working with us to build a solar-powered hammam, which is like a public bath. And so anybody that has a resource that could be useful to our volunteers for their communities, we want to include them as our development partners, and we want to be a liaison. Our volunteers, they do projects that happen through them, not by them, and they're the grease, I guess you could say. They're the ambassadors to the community. So all of our development partners have suggestions about where we should put volunteers, and it's they're going through it right now in Senegal and Malawi. The first sites are the hardest, because after that, actually after Hiba, her preschool, we all went up there for the unveiling of the preschool and had a weekend. It was an incredible. They put on this big celebration. The community and everybody from the whole valley had come up to the village to celebrate with us. And by the end of the weekend, they were all asking for their own Core Africa volunteers. So that's the ideal situation, that it comes from the community itself. And we actually put 5 volunteers in that valley the next year. They all had their own village, but we called it our cluster model, and it worked really well. So it's you know, if you were a Peace Corps volunteer, you know it doesn't always work, and you can't predict these things. And the fit between the volunteer and the community is not science. It's fit. It's not personal. Sometimes it just doesn't work, and you have to find somebody a new site. We definitely had that a couple of times. But the Peace Corps has been our biggest supporter for something like that, though. They really have so much advice. They've been doing this for so many years, and they know the players. They know how to get the authorizations and how to prepare host families to accept them. And it's complicated, and it's important that we do this right. And we definitely made mistakes the first couple of years, but we're getting better. Yes, you had a question.
It went back to the funding question. Have you approached the African Development Bank for funding or introductions at any level?
I did. I did talk to them. They fund mostly for-profit efforts like coffee, I guess you'd call those commodities rather than NGO efforts. But I have met them, and they were interested in the idea. And if you have a contact there, I'd be happy to accept a referral.
I have a lot of contacts in Senegal, but
excellent.
A long time ago from the African Development Bank, so not worth it. But I thought they might be a good place.
We are working with them, actually. They're a development partner, not a funder. But they do work with a lot of different NGOs on the ground, and so they've been really helpful at introducing us and linking us to resources.
Yeah, I can email you some Senegalese
contacts. That would be great.
Contacts.
Thank you.
I'd like to hear more about the NGOs networking with. Is somebody leaving? Okay. Did you have a question before you
No.
Okay. The woman on the end had a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's here. Go
okay.
Ahead.
Well, thank you. Your plans are very ambitious and admirable. I wondered in general how you conceive of getting to that goal of being every country in Africa, being in every country in Africa and so forth. And how just an outline.
Oh, sure. Basically, we are finishing our second year in Morocco. We had 7 the first year. We're finishing, the second group of 17 are finishing their service now. We hope to have 25 or 30 in Morocco next year and 12 in Senegal and Malawi. And then we want to focus on these countries for 3 years. Really perfect the model, especially if sending volunteers between countries. That's a whole new can of worms that we have a lot to figure out and get on the other side of. But we want to grow the program. I'd like to grow faster, maybe have 40 next year and then maybe 60 the following year, really start ramping it up to scale, to start scaling it and keeping it manageable at this stage. And then after this 3-year pilot phase, then I'd say 10 years from then, maybe in a couple of years we'll start applying for grants, for big grants to expand to countries. We had this grant through the Clinton Global Initiative, which has been incredible at meeting. It was a chance for us to meet with a lot of different philanthropists and other organizations. And, we're part of the conversation now. We really are out there, and we're working with all these different players. And I hope that when we're ready for the big ask, we have this Atlas Corps fellow I said we were working with. He's actually part of his job is to write an operating manual for Core Africa, how to do everything from A to Z so that we can give it. We're writing it together with our startup directors, and our colleagues in Morocco are helping us write everything down, how it works and ideas and challenges. And next year, when we have permanent startup directors in these countries, it'll be a great resource for them, and they'll help us perfect it even more. But then we'll have a really great operating plan. We can go to Tanzania and just say, here you go, have at it. I hope that it's never going to be easy, but I hope that it'll be, a process.
Unfortunately, we've reached the point in our program where there's time for only one last question.
Okay.
Oh, wow. I was wondering, and it kind of fits in with actually your prior, some of the things that you've been talking about, how much interest do you have as far as the applicants? What kind of applications are you getting, and are you, as far as your selection process, especially as you expand, are you really seeing increased applicants in the countries? And
absolutely. It's a great question. We were, the first year in Morocco, we had 28 applications, and we were really reaching out to all of our contacts. And the second year, we had 75. And I'm sorry, we had 175, so it's growing. I think we're going to have 1,000 this year apply in Morocco. I mean, it's just snowballing. They're just starting the outreach right now for the next group. But in Senegal, our first year, we didn't have any presence at all. We had 230 applications in Senegal the first year. In Malawi, we had about 120, which is a lot. And they were spectacular. Oh, my gosh. It was so hard to choose. I'm not worried about that so much. I'm a little worried about our capacity to deal with so many applications in future years, but we'll deal with that as it comes. But no, we look for the same thing that Peace Corps looks for. Grades are good, but really we're looking for judgment, maturity, a spirit of adventure, and a desire to be a part of the solution and make the world a better place. So it's not a scientific formula, but it's really exciting.
If they want to know more about the program or get in contact with somebody, what is your web link?
Our web link is corpsafrica.org. That's corpsafrica.org.
So Core Africa is one word.
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, our thanks to Liz Fanning and Javi Tazi for their interesting and highly informative program this evening. Thank you so much, and thank you, our listening audience, NorCal Peace Corps Association members, and our radio audience in the nation. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating 115 years, whatever, of being in the know is over.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.